I fell into a ring of fire. I fell in.
Let's see it.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Oh, I wish I was in Wellington. The wind is cutting.
Welcome to Fever FM. I'm joined by Dale and Cam. Cam won't say hi yet because he's got a mouthful of toast.
Hi.
Dale's still on Australian time. It's crack in, gents. Sorry, mate?
It's not toast, it's chicken.
Oh, that's an interesting
I don't eat bread.
Oh, yeah, good point. Let's get into the women's game. This is the Pride Round game versus Western Sydney Wanderers. An interesting team that was put out there. Foster, Barry, Kate Taylor playing at the back, McMeekin, Fraser, Winham, Breslin, Cox, Main, and Elliott. There's a lot of tens out on that field, I think is a nice way of saying it. What was your reaction, Dale, when you first saw that lineup?
I will admit, I haven't actually seen this full game. I've watched the extended highlights, but 3 hours in a different time zone did make it a bit tricky to watch on holiday. A little bit surprising to see Kate Taylor, I guess, at the centre back, because she hasn't barely played there at all, I think, this season, if I remember correctly. And seeing Breslin at sort of that holding midfield role, although she's done it a couple of weeks in a row now, and she hasn't looked too bad, I don't think.
Yeah, I thought she did a decent job.
And I guess a few surprises in terms of, I guess, maybe Elliot starting. Inspector not been there, but I guess being somewhat last game, perhaps a little bit of chance for some people to prove what they've got for next season or something like that.
It's certainly felt incredibly attacking, and yeah, like there wasn't anything on the game for us. There was a lot on it for Western Sydney. It certainly felt like we were going out there because, I mean, as you say, Breslin is an incredibly attacking player to be playing at six and always looking for a pass and always looking for to move the play forward. So with also Winham and Fraser both playing ahead of her, that's incredibly attacking lineup.
And Cox.
Cox out wide and I think Main on the other side. And yeah, it was and Elliott as well. So yeah, incredibly attacking. It was a bit of a surprise for me, unless Temps has seen something in the way that Western plays, Western Sydney played, that they could exploit by playing this particular way. But yeah, it was a surprise.
Well, it was certainly a good start. A lot of opportunities in those opening few minutes. I don't want to say profligate, but certainly not the cutthroat edge that we would have expected from someone like Speckmeyer, maybe. A guilty chance to Cox at the beginning from what is possibly the worst back pass I have ever seen. Unfortunately, Cox wasn't able to round the keeper.
I've got to give the keeper some credit there. The keeper's done really well.
She did amazing.
Yeah, she should have. Cox should have done much better with that.
Yeah. Yeah, whoever that keeper is, I haven't seen her. If I've seen her play before, I didn't recognise it, but she was ice cold on that. She just didn't bat an eyelid, which was hella impressive. But yeah, there was another, I think there was a, I mean, Wanderers that first half were their own worst enemies. They kept turning the ball over. We just didn't seem to quite get it together. Cam, what was your kind of view of that first 25?
I thought we were certainly the dominant side in that period of time. As we did create quite a few opportunities, but lacked the killer instinct. I don't necessarily believe Speckmeyer would have made too much of a difference to that, to be honest. But Western Sydney seemed to be on edge with the way they were playing because they had so much on it. It felt like the pressure they'd put themselves under was kind of coming to the fore on the field, giving away cheap passes through transition and being a bit sloppy at the back as well. And it just kind of invited pressure until a point where it paid for us in the end. I don't know whether that was, say, the system that Temps had implemented for the day or whether, you know, Western Sydney just couldn't get it over the line into the playoffs, for example. But yeah, we certainly felt like it was ours, and when we ventured to take the lead, it was a deserved lead to take.
Dale, this was for all the gilt edge chances we had, the opportunity that Emma Main took to score, it was probably the least of these, I think, and a great finish from what wasn't the greatest cross.
Are you sure? Well, that was a fucking ripper cross, wasn't it? Out wide, whip.
It was outstanding, mate. You are underrating that. She's done, put that through at a beautiful height for heading home, and it was a lovely header to get into the corner.
Oh, I disagree about the height. It was good on that. It found Emma Main, but she had a lot to do.
As a professional game of football, she's under pressure with the ball coming in, and she's under pressure in the middle of the box, as they should be to finish it. If I'm a striker, and that's coming through to me at the height that's coming through, and I can put the power into it or the glance into it the way she has, I'm loving that all day. That's a fantastic cross. I'm really happy with that.
You were never getting down that low.
I wouldn't need to. I'd have finished it with my foot.
Only if he stumbled and fell into it.
No. I wouldn't have got there in the first place, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, she also did the cross on basically one leg, I think, didn't she? Because she was down injured. I'm not sure what exactly she was for, but I think it's just one of those ones that is just beyond the keeper and behind the back line, pretty hard to defend. You know, what you can do is like try shove a leg out there and you're pointing towards your own goal, so it's sort of own goal material type of a cross, and Emma Main did spectacularly well to press it past into the back post.
A diving glancing header, I think, is pretty spectacular, especially considering the opportunities that they had squandered before then. At that stage, to me, it just looked like it was going to be one-way traffic. Wanderers, to be fair, started showing a little more intent, but nothing really in the final third. There was that opportunity for Hardick, their striker, but I think she was one on three.
Harding, yeah. I think she had a couple of long-range pops, I think, didn't she, that were kind of straight in.
Yeah.
They had nothing in the first half. Nothing of genuine consequence in that first half. Mm. Certainly nothing that I thought they were going to score from.
Yeah. We did see Kate Taylor go off in that first half. I mean, if this wasn't the end of the season, this would be something that would really worry you. But Jaber coming on, a lot of it, she's got a fair bit of experience this season, but did leave that centre midfield ominously open, I think is a nice way of putting it.
Taylor is grown up playing centre back, so and as an A-League quality centre back and a defensive midfielder as well. Like Jaber has been pretty good in the most part since she's come in, and played like a lot of minutes since she has been signed, but replacing one for the other is quite a decent step down in quality.
One area that we did look especially good was in that 10 with Wynnum, her ability to keep ball, Fraser moving the ball around and able to slot passes and shoot, and Cox proving an absolute menace at times. She burned off one defender out on the right and then just absolutely nailed another defender in a tackle and took ball. I thought without Speckmeyer there, she stepped up pretty nicely. I realised she didn't have the best game overall, but and that she didn't take her opportunities. But man, she can make a nuisance of herself.
I'm quite a fan of Isabel Cox. So, she's a unit. She's big, she's strong, but she's also quite quick. Kind of that complete package as well. And she's proven that she's not just a bulldozer through, and she actually has a bit of skill on the ball as well. So I'm a bit of a fan. And you're right, she wasn't lethal in front of goal by any stretch, but she certainly stretched that defence. She certainly made it difficult. As a striker, you're quite happy if you're Emma Main with the attention going to Wynnum, Fraser and Cox, and it's allowing you the time and space that she received across that game.
Hmm. Something that did impress me was the way Wynnum's kind of grown into that combo with Macy Fraser. Mm. Her ability to get into space and then give that ball. she seems to be speeding it up a little bit, which I think had a bit of intent too.
Yeah, the other thing is teams can't double team both of them. You know what I mean? It was very clear last season, as we talked about many times already, how if you put two defenders on Alyssa Winham, then a lot of our attacking creativity was blunted. Not all of it, but a lot of it. But you can't do that when you've got both Fraser and Winham on the field. Three across two, sure, but that still leaves one of them with the ability to make a pass and or beat a player. So it makes a world of difference. And if they both stay on for next season, I mean, it's a different conversation entirely, obviously, but if they're both here next season, if they can work on that combination, that's a hell of a creative force you've got through there. And if Winham can work on her finishing to go along with the passing range and the ability to beat a player that she has, then she could be, both of them, incredible weapons in there.
Yeah, I think if Macy Fraser can learn that trying to smash your laces through it into a howling southerly is not the greatest way to score, she'll probably go pretty well as well.
Sure, but I mean, she's young, right? She's only like 19 or something. Yeah. She's super young, and she's going to learn from the experience, exactly.
Yeah, once we get, you know, if we can keep a lot of these players, as you'd hope that we should be able to, especially Kate Taylor, Macy Fraser and Winham, I mean, that's a hell of a centre midfield trio if you can just get a solid centre-back pairing behind them.
I'm a fan of Van der Meer and Barry as the central defence combo. And again, it all comes down to who you can keep for next season, obviously. And if we can keep Van der Meer, Barry as our starting centre pair with Kate Taylor in front of them, I think defensively it's incredibly sound. And again, so you're effectively looking at a core five across those, you know, those five central positions, and looking at adding on ability to finish and ability to cross, which we still have within that team, obviously, to complement those players. So who stays on is a massive question. But I think you're right in that if you do get that core central defence with the Taylor and then that two really skillful attacking tens in front, it is looking like a hell of a lineup.
Well, one of the positives, I think, for the Phoenix women's program is the fact that the Auckland FC women's program basically hasn't started. And now that we're at the end of the season, you've got to be thinking that recruitment's going to kick into gear around the Phoenix going, hey, look, you can either come and work, you know, play at a program where we've got everything sorted now. We've got a coach that, you know, we've seen that is decent. And we've got a, you know, a program that actually is bringing through players and good players playing a good good type of football. It must make recruitment a little easier.
I mean, you also have the advantage of the fact that the Auckland team isn't starting for another year, right? So at the moment, you are still the only professional full-time, well, I say full-time, it's not exactly full-time, but we are the only professional outlet at the moment in this country for those players. And if they want to play professional football, this is the place to be. That bodes well because of the academy setups we have and the structures that are currently in place, the fact that you have proven that we have a team that can compete and up to the second to last week of the competition, we're still in with a shout of making that six. And whilst they probably should have across the course of the season, they're probably good enough to make that six, you know, and with a bit of bad luck thrown in, they didn't. That shows an incredible amount of sound progress from the last two seasons. It shows a capability within the club to promote through their ranks, to trust in the systems that they have in place. And if you're a player who's looking at becoming a pro, getting in that system, the Phoenix are doing everything they can to show you that this is the right system to be in to become a professional footballer in the women's game. It's fantastic. Auckland's a long way to go. I think they're more likely to pair with a club that already has an academy set up there, like someone like an Auckland United or an Auckland City or someone, you know, along those lines, who perhaps will save them having to do a lot of that legwork themselves. But as we know, setting up those academies and developing those players is not an overnight job. It takes, you know, years to get those structures in place and working well, particularly to where the Phoenix have them now. So I think within the women's game particularly, I think we have stolen a march in there, and I think that will show hopefully for the next few years to come.
I've got to say that, I mean, if we look back at that this season as a whole, the number of injuries the team has had, and obviously losing Chloe Knott as well on top of that, and the fact that, you know, it's definitely not been a wooden spoon season. We were in with a shout for three quarters of the season. Barring those injuries, you know, a top six, top four finish was definitely in the offing. I mean, yep. I've lost count of those injuries.
I think the problem we had with that is, of course, that you lost your core central midfield and the cover for your core central midfield in Flea, Grace and Chloe, all relatively in a short period of time, and then you start losing your defenders and fullbacks as well. So yeah, you lose the ability to have consistency of selection and consistency of performance, and that in the long term is probably what cost us across that season. But if you can get that core in place, I think things bode well for the future.
Also, I mean, we've seen Speckmeyer come out publicly and say she basically wants to stay if it's available, which is also a very good sign. If your overseas pros are still, you know, are putting their hand up publicly, it bodes well for what you're offering as a club.
I mean, I quite like what the pros added this season, to be honest. All of them, I think all of them have contributed in a way. You know, so you expect your pros to end up being the top players. This is the first time we've had, obviously, the overseas pros come in and complement the club. So I actually think the recruitment of them and how frequently they were used, I think, is the key. The recruitment of them has actually been pretty good. I quite like it. They've all contributed in a strong, positive way. And if any of them were looking at staying on, I certainly wouldn't be disappointed by keeping them for next season.
Every player's going to say that they want to stay, right? Like, you're not going to say no in public. It's like when players say, oh, I want coach to stay on next year, because if you say no and then they stay next year, it's a pretty bad look. I don't want to say, yeah, read too much into what players say about, you know, clubs or coaches or whatever, because there is an element of protecting what might come next season or whatever.
Yeah, it's media training, basically, isn't it? And the possibility of having a job in the future. I get that.
Let me put it this way: I was quite surprised that she was getting coverage and stuff, and doing it so early.
Yeah, I guess it was in the context of being called up to Venezuela again, wasn't it? So she was kind of in the media for that, I guess. So. Or at a press conference about that, maybe, or post-game. So I guess she's probably, haven't heard the audio, but I suspect she probably got asked, oh, are you going to be around next year? So
a little kind of, softball question.
Yeah, so you got to straight bat these, you tend to straight bat these things, right?
Yeah, that's probably fair. We have buried the lead a little bit with the rest of the match. We saw Emma Main score her second goal with what is one of the worst attempts at saving the ball I have seen in the A-League, which is saying something. Emma Main's basically hit it high straight to the keeper, who has let it go through her hands. Is there any redeeming parts of this, Dale?
Not really, no. Should expect most keepers to swallow that pretty safely.
It was pretty disappointing considering how well she'd done in that first save against Cox one-on-one, and then to let that through, yeah, that's got to hurt. At the other end, between the sticks, we saw Riley Foster being subbed off, not for an injury this time, but just as a substitution to bring on a young academy keeper, Daniele. Riley Foster looked very happy to be giving her an opportunity. Almost broke her in half when she hugged her after the game too. Danielli did make a pretty decent save from a free kick at the top of the box too. After, was it Breslin that swept the leg?
One thing I'll say about Amy is she's an incredibly popular member of the squad. She's the type of player that every squad needs, with the personality that really does brighten up an environment. So to see her get her opportunity was awesome. I'm glad she has. She's really, really deserving and worked hard to put herself in the position that she's currently in. So congratulations to her, well-deserved. And that save that she's made from that resulting free kick up onto her post will certainly go a long way to help her confidence about playing at that level.
How old is she, Cam?
Unsure, genuinely unsure, but was still in about the academy, so I'm guessing under 20.
Yeah, I guess this might be a somewhat half look to kind of next year, because, you know, we know Bree's been back in Sydney for a few weeks for personal reasons, so she may not want to come back to Wellington if for whatever reasons. Foster may not return either for our reasons or her reasons. And maybe they want to give her 10 minutes to, you know, not really to see how she does really, but to give her that, you know, that debut that if she does become the number one next season for whatever reason, maybe, you know, Lily's not around, her back's bad or whatever, that she's had that debut and that kind of pressure or whatever that might come from a debut is kind of gone already because you've kind of done that. So maybe there's a little bit of that as well. Because that's what they did for that first season, wasn't it, when Bree got her debut like 10 minutes to go before Lily went off to Ferns camp, I think. She subbed her off 10 minutes so that she got that experience first as a lead-in in a game before having to do it straight, you know, from start. But, yeah.
It does kind of speak to how well the keeping situation has been when we've got Riley Foster, Bree Edwards, and obviously now Amy Danielli getting a debut. We've failed to mention Lily being missing this whole season too.
Danielli is 19.
Okay, she's still got some years.
Yeah, she's still young, isn't it? But a very, very, very popular member, and I really hope she does well. She's really good.
Any final thoughts on this game before we wrap it up?
No, thoughts for the cross the season, but I'm guessing we're going to do a little roundup of that maybe in the weeks to come. But honestly, I thought the pride celebration was a massive success. I really do. It was so good to see so many people embracing the rainbow. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but genuinely embracing the rainbow and getting involved in the spirit of and of what it's supposed to be. That kit, that white kit with the rainbow, was absolutely top draw. Absolutely top draw. I'm a massive fan. I think I'm having to buy one of those for my daughter as well, because, you know, rainbows. A good event, very well put on, a good win. We thoroughly deserved it. I thought, bar the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half, we were the best side across that match. And I think 2-0 was flattering to Western Sydney.
Those kits are almost as good as our Yellow Fever pins, rainbow pins, also available for sale. Go to yellowfever.co.nz/shop if you want one.
Just want to show you. My one's currently sitting on the hat. You can see that in the, you guys listening can't, but the other two can see it on the stream with the sitting on the bright yellow hat. I genuinely, mate, they are fantastic pins. I think they're excellent design, very well delivered.
Thanks, Cam. I have a box of 100 here sitting right next to me that I can show you, as opposed to your grainy version of what's sitting on your hat.
I do know people that want them, so I think they will sell.
Yeah, I'm not normally a fan of a football lapel pin, but that one is a very nice design. Shout out to Special One, because
I am all over lapel pins. I absolutely love them, and this is a permanent addition now to the vast collection.
Let's move on to the men's game. So this is at the Caketon versus Brisbane, a 1 p.m. kickoff on an Easter Sunday, apparently, so that Brisbane could fly home that night. Sure, why not? I mean, you know, they've got to go home at some
it'll
stage.
It'll be the available times for TV, mate. That's all that will be.
Any number of reasons.
Nah, the flight home that night was like 6:30 or something.
Absolutely, sure. Why stay another day? It's fine. But I'm sure they could, you know, they kicked off at 1 because that's when the time that was available for TV. And honestly, I'd be quite happy with them kicking off at that time of day every single match. Personally, that was great.
Would have been pretty amusing if there was like one of those like 20-minute like net collapses or something that took it was much more touch and go whether they make the flight or not.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, the players, it's full time. Yeah. The players are running off, like stripping off, trying to get dressed to get on the plane.
I remember the All Whites did that. The All Whites members of the Phoenix did that too when we played in Christchurch a few years ago to head off to Mexico to lose in the playoff. Yeah, I remember that. The All Whites literally ran off the field at full time to make their flight.
Yeah, it would have been a shame if there's any stop oil protesters gluing their hands to the road on the way to the airport. A bit of a slightly changed lineup, obviously, with Tim Payne out. We saw Salas, Alte and Rufa and Pennington across that midfield, as you'd expect. Paulson, Salas, Sermon, Wooten, Sutton, Alte, Rufa, Pennington, Cryev, Ball and Barbarousis. Cam, I know how excited you were about this first opening goal.
I was.
This is textbook.
It was textbook. It was so well executed. To score, was it 1:10, something like that, into the game, and the opposition haven't touched the ball? That was absolutely beautiful. And you can't, if you're a coach and you're teaching your team, you know, particular tactics and how to play, and they can execute a move like they've just executed, honestly, you'd be over the moon, wouldn't you? That was just fantastic to watch.
I mean, it was no Florian Wirtz 7 seconds in, but, you know, it was pretty
good. No, it was better than that. It was better than that, mate. It was better than that because they have worked, and I think like every member of the team touched the ball within the build-up of that play. Certainly pretty close to it. There was a lot of interlinking passes to free up Sam Sutton on that left-hand side. There was patient build-up, drawing forward the defence into a press to allow Sutton all that time and space. And the finish from Cryev, beautiful. Absolutely fantastic to get his foot in there and just guide it past the keeper into the far side. I genuinely thought, oh, here we go. We're going to score 4 or 5 today. It was an incredible start. I mean, flattered to see for the rest of the game, but it really was quite good.
Dale, this was quite the game of two sides, left and right. Suts had a good start. The right side did not. How are you feeling 20 minutes in, even 1-0 up?
Yeah, I had to watch this on delay, which kind of gives you a slightly different impression because you know the result. So in the moment, pressure isn't quite, or, you know, frustrations aren't there. But, yeah, it was certainly, yeah, us sort of each side bombing down their own left-hand touchline, wasn't it? I mean, Sutton was, you know, got a lot got very high very often. And they were kind of doing the same with us, and it felt like that Salas Alte kind of rotation didn't work as well as it had in previous weeks, or perhaps as good as the Alte Payne rotation that's often been used there. Not sure what that was, but I mean, overall it was a fairly, or maybe scratchy performance. And I imagine that's, yeah, somewhat to be expected. You know, had 6 players out for the last 2 weeks. So the team hasn't really trained together for 2 weeks. Had, I think, maybe 1 training session the day before altogether. So it's probably not surprising that it wasn't the most, you know, polished of performances, especially when you throw in the travel from back from overseas and as well. So maybe that's a little bit to blame. But I think on balance, I think we deserve to win. Yeah, they had a couple of pretty decent chances in that first half, but I think for most part that second half they had a bit of pressure, but didn't really create much at all in that second half.
I think AP made 1 outstanding save in the first half, genuinely outstanding save to keep us ahead. But for all of their pressure and for all of the ball that they had, which felt considerable, and I can do that by judging by the number of images I took, which was quite low compared to a normal game. For all that time and all that pressure and all that territory, it didn't feel like they were going to break us down bar that one AP save.
Yeah, that was the Jelicic one, I think, wasn't it? The one where he kind of got a very strong hand from a pretty close range.
Yeah, I don't remember who hit it. I couldn't actually see who the striker was from the distance, just the save that AP made.
Yeah, it seems to be a struggle for Brisbane at the moment. Waddington is at best erratic, I think, and Jelicic. Hoare hasn't featured as much as I thought he would this season. That was one of the talking points that Alex Paulson was actually forced to make a number of saves this week and stood up pretty nicely. But there were a couple of other talking points that, I mean, if we're going to do this in 20 minutes, lads, we're going to have to get to. David Ball has tipped the ball up, spun 180 and gone to bring the ball down with his foot. Unfortunately, there was a Brisbane head in the way. Is that the nicest way I can put this?
Yes.
This was a very orange card.
You've seen him given red, eh? Yeah, I remember a specific situation, fairly similar, Robin Van Persie for Arsenal getting a red card for kicking someone in the head in exactly the same kind of way. No intent, didn't mean it, it was genuinely trying to play, to bring a ball down, but the guy's head was there. And he may not have been looking, he may have been tracking the ball, but if you're going to have your head that high, you're giving yourself trouble. So I've 100% seen those given. I'm glad he wasn't, because I don't believe there's any intent in that whatsoever. I don't believe he's gone there to injure a player at all, but he has got him in the head. So, yeah, it's orange is generous, I think.
Yeah, I think there's probably two things that save him here. I think one is it's not the intent, because, the laws of the game don't worry about intent at all. I think one is the height is kind of more, I want to say, stomach height than kind of shoulder height. I think the other is he's not swinging into the ball. He's trying to, I think, control the ball. So there's no kicking the head, no forceful kicking of the head. Like, I know there's contact, but it's more of a, there's no momentum from his foot into his head. If that kind of makes sense, it's more of a kind of the end of his swing contact. So I think the kind of, I think for a red card, I think is a wording, I think it needs to be excessive force, and I don't think it matches that level. I think reckless, I think, is what they say is a yellow card, and I think that's probably what it is. So I think, yeah, I agree that on another day, and perhaps if it's slightly higher, or if he's sort of swinging to kind of hoist a clearance or something like that, you'd probably get to a red. I think on balance, I think this is probably the right decision. I mean, the fact that it didn't go to actual proper VAR probably, recognises that, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it felt like it was the just result rather than the result I expected by the rules of the game. Aldred did dip his head in there, and it was as much head coming into foot as foot going into head. So, yeah, I thought that it was fair, but I was also expecting to see a dirty great red card come out.
Yeah, I was saying, you've seen those given, and you'd understand if he was given for that action, whether you like it or not. It's, it is one of those things. And I'm over the moon he wasn't, because he's not a filthy player by any stretch of the imagination. So,
I think you can probably make an argument both ways. And if you're far as there to take care of the howlers, I don't think it's at that point. If he got given a red card, I don't know if it gets turned back over the other way. I think that's the kind of the fuzziness.
He'd probably get a couple of matches if it was given a red card.
Yeah. We didn't get too many chances as the game progressed. Unfortunately, Cryov had a bit of a guilt-edged one where he just didn't get it on target, that header. This is something that I've noticeable because he missed a bit, that the Knicks have really been pretty efficient with their opportunities in turning them. This is when I kind of was like, oh no, is this the game where we don't get it right? Cam, you were down there. How did it kind of feel?
I'm trying to remember the opportunity, actually. I can't remember that one specifically.
It's just after half time, I think it was a cross from Salas, and Cruyff absolutely loses his player, goes charging in, and just
he's right in the middle, unmarked.
Yeah, unmarked, skims off his head, goes past the back post. He kind of like almost attacks it too much. He's trying to, you know, bust past his defender, but his defender's nowhere near it, and kind of jumps a bit too late or early or too, you know, too low, so it doesn't quite get a good catch. But it felt like it was, if he had just delayed his run a tap touch, he would have got, you know, a much better connection and should have been a goal.
It looked like he was expecting to have to go over the top of a defender and no one was with him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that, it, I got the worst sinking feeling in my stomach after that. I was just sure that was going to be our opportunity that we missed out.
My sinking feeling came after Costa's goal got ruled out for offside. That's when my sinking feeling came.
Well, there was one just after the Crave one. I think Altay got it to the back post and had a pretty good angle to work with and just sort of side-footed it straight to the keeper. That was another, you know, those two chances, I guess, just maybe 5 minutes after half-time, which if we'd bagged one of them, you'd think that'd be it for them.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this is the risk you run when you're effectively playing four defensive midfielders on the park. It's the opportunities are going to fall to them, and they're not necessarily going to be the most efficient at taking them. Altay especially. I mean, I don't recall him having many shots all season. Yeah, or we saw some relatively early subs. Obviously, Ben Old sitting on the bench, which was a little bit unexpected for mine, but I guess made a bit of sense when you were playing Sutton High.
Italiano mentioned this in the post game. He said he didn't want to start too many players who are coming back from overseas because he wasn't sure how they'd all recover. So he kind of thought, oh, let's leave Old as an impact. And yeah, I think that 15 minutes, like I just mentioned two chances in the 5 minutes, but that 15 minutes after half time, they had a bit of pressure keeping the ball, rotating the ball, delivering lots of teasing balls into the box, but nothing of note. But it felt like there was a little bit of pressure winding up on us there. And I think once Old came on, that pressure was basically zilch after that. They didn't do jack basically after the next 30 minutes.
Yeah, Old for manages to basically, because he can promote that, carry that ball so well, he kind of takes a lot of pressure off. You don't turn it off, don't turn the ball over so quickly, I guess. It's kind of cool to see that we've got someone who can attack, but it also gives his defense a bit of a break as well. We saw Sheridan coming on as well, going out to right back. I was quite impressed with Sheridan. I thought he was pretty tidy. I mean, not normally a fullback, obviously, but I thought he had a pretty solid game.
I thought he was a fullback. Positive, he plays right back.
He's a centre back, isn't he? Oh, well, I mean, right back, centre back, whatever. Same thing.
Spoken like a goalkeeper.
I mean, you're defending, that's all you need to do. But yeah.
Just form a line, lads.
Yeah, stop them getting to me, yep.
Yep.
But I didn't even clock that he really has, maybe his impact in that last 30 minutes, which probably goes to that he didn't exactly embarrass himself or anything like that. You know, no one got around him, or, you know, he didn't pick up a runner or something like that, which probably means he's had a pretty solid performance.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, I mean, it's almost, I don't want to say it's all you can expect from someone that's got as few minutes as he has. But I think that, I mean, considering this is probably his second or third substitution on in the second half of the season that I can remember.
Second time I remember getting on. He played in Auckland, and this is the second time I remember him getting on.
Yeah, I think he only got like 10 minutes or something here or there, whereas he's got, you know, he's got 35 minutes here, which I thought is a good result for him.
And you know, he's listed on the website as a midfielder too, so we're both way off the mark.
Yeah, I thought he was a central midfielder. I thought it was him and Conchie going wrong for the same spot.
My bad. Apologise.
But I think previously we'd seen Conchie cover that right channel when we needed cover for right back. Italiano's made a bit of a different call, and I think it actually paid off pretty well. He's obviously a very capable footballer. We saw OVH getting on again, showing he's got a hell of a work rate, but just doesn't seem to have that, should we say, that final touch. Dale, how are we going to describe him and be polite?
Yeah.
I'll take this one. I think his game was negatively impacted by what else happened, and the one opportunity he got was when he was actually quite isolated, where there wasn't too many people up there with him for obvious reasons, and I'm sure we're going to come to those. And the shot, he got all of it, but yeah, it was a relatively comfortable catch for the keeper. So I think, it was possibly a victim of circumstance in this game more than anything else.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't mind him in this sort of scenario. He is a very high work rate. He's very physical and he will chase all day. So when you're defending, I think he's not a bad option to bring on. We saw Ben Old getting an opportunity and forcing Macklin Freak to make a decent save. There was the Sullis one later, but I guess we've got to get to the main talking point. Alex Rufer, he's back from Whites, and now he's taking a bit of a sit down for a week. I can't remember who it was. Was it Jelicic? He's tangled with Jelicic's is...
Hoare.
Is it Hoare? Hoare's gone down. The ball has rolled on. Hoare is lying face down on the ground. The ball has rolled on top of his legs. Hoare's kind of hooked his calves over the top of the ball. And Rufer has gone to clear the ball.
He's successfully cleared the ball from between his legs. He's been very successful in the action he took there.
Yes, he has. His foot has made Rufer's foot has made contact with Hoare's hamstring, the back of his thigh, after kicking the ball free. And yes, give me your opinion on this, gents, because those replays didn't look good, but also there was the sort of replay that they never look good.
He's a victim of slow motion. For a start, he shouldn't have tried to kick the ball out from between his legs. I think that decision was poor. It's not an action he needed to take. And, yeah, the guy was lying on the ball. There's no easy way to get it out of there without it looking bad in the first place. Make the good decision. The good decision there is don't swing at the ball. When he decided to swing at the ball, what he's done is the steps he's taken were fine. And once he's kicked the ball, there's no unnatural motion there with his foot. He's gone to put his foot down and someone's leg's in the way. And it's in the way because, you know, he's taken a swing. He shouldn't have taken a swing. Slow motion makes that look a lot worse than it was. My biggest issue, as I said with this, is that he put himself in that position in the first place. And he's put himself in a position where the referee and the VAR can make that a read. And he didn't need to.
Dale.
I agree with parts of what Cam said. I think, the thing about Rufer is he plays close to the line, right? And that's what makes him good in that position. Occasionally he strays past it. And I think this is one of the moments where I think there's a lot of commentary about where's he meant to put his foot, but he knows where the player is. It's not like he's turned around and stood on a guy because he didn't know the person was behind him. He knows where the player is. So I think it is feasible to clear the ball, do a little toe poke, and then not step on the player. And I think that's his problem. I don't think he deliberately did it. I don't think the contact is for a long period of time. I don't think it's with particular force. But if you're going to make that challenge, you've got to do everything to not step on him. And he could have kicked away, fallen over, fallen on top of him, done anything else except stepped on him, and he would have been fine. But I think the fact that he's done it, as you say, it gives referees and every opportunity to say, should he have done it? And I don't think he should have. So I think, I think on balance, I think it's a red card. It's you know, like the worst rear card out going out there. I think they probably milked it quite hard. They surrounded the ref, you know, did everything that a Ruben Zadkovic side would do, you'd expect to do. You know, his DNA is all over the squad now. You know, he's only been in it for 3 months, but you can see, you know, where they're going. Yeah, I don't disagree with the red card at all. I found quite interesting that the referees had said it was violent conduct, which is basically contact with a player when the ball is not around. So off and off the ball incident, and it got downgraded to serious foul play, which is when the ball is around, you're playing the ball. So very interesting that the refs thought that that was the ball had gone and it was a kind of a separate incident that he kind of deliberately stepped on him after the fact, as opposed to in the process of making the tackle slash clearance.
I had read online that the ref had passed it up as violent conduct because that was what, or certainly in his report for the post-match review, was that it had been passed up as violent conduct because that's what the Brisbane players had alleged, that they were saying it was deliberate. And then the match review panel had just basically downgraded and said, no, it's not that.
No, I don't think that's how it works. I think refs get together and say what it was. Like, I don't think what the opposition says comes into it at all.
I don't disagree. I mean, that's definitely what should be happening.
I mean, the difference, I don't know why you would, because the difference is that violent conduct starts at 3 weeks. Serious foul play starts at 1 week suspension. So just intriguing that that's what the referee thought at the time, was that it was a separate incident from the tackle, which I don't think is the case.
Yeah, the foot coming down is part of the motion of him having kicked out. There's no, it's all part of the same, like, mechanical action of his legs. So there's no way that's a separate incident.
I found that quite laughable, to be quite honest. At the time watching it, I thought that David Ball's one was more of a red. I can definitely see how that was adjudged to be a red, and I can definitely see how David Ball's was adjudged to be yellow. But I think that, you know, as far as the scale of risk and that sort of thing goes, I think Hoare managed to milk that like a milking thing. It was
yeah. Cow.
Yeah.
No. Well, not a cow.
Handmade.
Cows don't milk things.
But honestly, mate, just don't do it. Like, don't put your foot in there and you're fine. You're not giving the ref the opportunity to make a call on it at all if you don't stick your foot in there.
I wonder, I mean, let's be honest, that ref had let a lot go both ways game.
I didn't think he was particularly good game, to be fair.
No, I didn't think, but there's certainly no bias in there or anything, but he was letting a lot go, and I wonder if Rufa was kind of going, well, you're letting everything go, you're not calling him for basically lying on the ground, holding the ball with his legs, what am I meant to do? But I think if the ref had kind of been making those calls, you know, Rufa just would have said, ref, he's playing the ball on the ground, just, you know, what am I meant to do here?
Like I say, if he'd kicked the ball away and then accidentally fell on him, it would be nothing. You know, the fact that he's planted his foot, I don't think it's a stomp by any, you know, people said kind of stomp. I don't, stomp implies an element of deliberateness and force,
malicious behavior.
And I don't think it was that. Not saying that he doesn't have it in his locker, because, you know, he does play, as I say, kind of in that aggressive kind of close to the line sort of style, but I think he had every ability to clear that ball and step over the player at the same time.
For me, this was I think Roofs has become a really good A-League footballer from a technical point of view. He's really solid and really has learned that role. I think it's a question of he's still learning the leadership thing, and he feels a part of that leadership is to be aggressive, is to be overt and kind of lead from the front. And I think that that's what got him into trouble.
Yeah, because what was that other game he got sent off for a second yellow card? I can't remember the game. And it was a time when we were under the pump and struggling a little bit. and he kind of went into a tackle but too rushed and got a second yellow card. It was the kind of same kind of maybe kind of element of wanting to G up the players by making a good tackle but
went in too hard.
Didn't quite time it and did a kind of stupid, you know, inaction at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think that moderation, he's shown the ability to learn the football side of it. And I think that based on that, he's going to learn the ability to be that kind of leader as well and know where that line is. Because I think he does that well as a footballer. But when he leads himself with that emotion, I think that's when he struggles a bit. I mean, we saw as he was getting sent off, he was kind of having to be pushed away by, I think it was Salas, to kind of go, no, let's not get into this now. You're about to get in a punch up with some of the people and disappear for a while.
Well, I think what happened is he, when he got red carded, I think he gave Wooten the armband and then started to walk off. And I think it was either Corey, I think Corey Brown started giving some verbal, so he gave some verbal back, and then Hall came in, and then I think he probably did a bit of a, you know, milking, diving, you know, play acting.
Oh, there was...
And then it was kind of all in.
Yeah, I mean, you have to recognise that they're a Zadkovic side, right? As you say, they're going to do that. They're going to try and ruin your season.
Yeah.
So I think that he needed to recognise that and just shut that emotion down and just kind of go, okay. It was nice to see him standing in the tunnel. I'm not sure that he's quite allowed to do that, but with his tracksuit on, a very big grin on his face once that final whistle blew. Don't suppose you got any photos of that, Cam?
Of him? No. I got a lot of photos of players at full time, though, and I've posted a fair few. There was a lot of good celebrations in there. And deserved, to be fair. Deserved celebrations. The particularly the Sermon, Wooten, Paulson triumvirate.
Triumvirate, my man, you're on fire. Where that leaves the men's side now is 3 points out in front. The Mariners had played their game in hand against Melbourne City overnight and managed to nick a 2-1 win, much to my and every Knicks fan's chagrin, Cam.
What? What an absolute bottle job from Melbourne City. This is why no one likes you in the league.
Yep.
Just cannot deal
with all the money. And
You're still Melbourne heart at heart.
At heart, yep. Yeah, they're definitely underneath those blue jerseys is a nice red and white striped one. Absolutely unreliable. We did see, obviously that still leaves us 3 points out in front, but now a big game coming up against the Mariners in Gosford. Should the Mariners win, they would go top based on the wins and also goal difference, if it came down to that. But Knicks win or draw, they stay top. How do we see this going, gents?
Yeah, it's a tough one, eh? This is going to be a tough game. But we've said that many times this season, and Chiefy has actually come through. We've said that, you know, we don't get stuff out of Melbourne. We've got stuff in Melbourne this season. And there's plenty of opportunities, plenty of games this season where the way a Knicks team would usually play would end up in us losing. And the game against Brisbane is a perfect example, because there's not many times in the past where we've gone a backs against the wall performance like that comes away with us winning 1-0, and you know, that would generally be a loss. So Mariners have got to go into this one as favourites. I'll give them that. But Chief, he's proven time and again this season that he's very clued up. He's very astute tactically. And he knows how to set his team to get out of the game what he needs to get out of the game. So I think we've got to go into it confident we can get something, even if we're not the favourites.
Yeah, it is worth noting that they have had, obviously, a game against Sydney on the 30th of March, game against Melbourne City on the 2nd of April, and then playing on the 6th of April. So this is a bit of a tough run for the Mariners. So a bit of hope there, Dale.
Yeah, I guess, in that Melbourne City game, they didn't play at all well and should have been well behind in that first half, and they were, I guess, slightly better in the second half. But, they haven't been great the last 2 weeks, the Mariners. Yeah, we might not have been that great, but I don't think we've been as bad as sort of Central Coast have been. But, yeah, I mean, impossible to know how it'll go. I mean, I'm sure we will look to play for a draw. Not to play for a draw, but to be another element of defensive first.
Difficult to beat.
Yeah, I think you take a draw, even though we've got a harder run in after this game. But Central Coast have a lot more travel and two extra games in the ACL Cup to play as well. So there's that kind of element that as well. So even if we lose, I don't think it's a catastrophe, because I feel like
No.
both teams will still drop points at some point in the last 3 games after this, is it?
Yep.
Yep.
I'd be surprised if both teams win all three after this one. So,
So as you mentioned, the Mariners have Western United, the woeful Western United, and Adelaide and the Jets. Who knows with the Jets, to be quite honest, and Adelaide have managed to find a bit of form around their newly, well, their soon to departing striker. But they do have 2 games against Abdish Atta sprinkled in there as well. The Knicks have those games against Victory, Jets, and MacArthur. So slightly harder run in, but certainly 3 games, 4 games versus 6 games in the same amount of time. So,
And a hell of a lot less travel.
yeah, true, true. There is that those games. Where is Abdish Atta?
Kyrgyzstan.
Holy shit!
Yeah, so they've got a fair way to go.
Yeah, that's a fair way to go, and probably not a direct flight either.
Don't think there's Gosford to Kyrgyzstan direct flight?
Yeah, probably not, mate. It's not the metropolis we think it is sometimes. But
Gosford.
yeah, Gosford. So that Mariners game is at 7:30 on Saturday. That's New Zealand time. Any closing words? Any thoughts as to what happens here? I mean, I think we know that Chiefy's gonna make the team very hard to beat. And if it means only getting a point, it means only getting a point, right?
Yeah, and as I said, mate, he's shown very clearly he's very tactically astute this season, and he's getting a lot of points I would not have expected our team to get this year. So every chance we can nick something, and nicking something, if it's 3 points, that goes a awful long way to giving us the plate. But if it's even a point, certainly puts us in good stead with a tough run-in, but certainly not as hard as Mariners with the travel that they have to have.
Yep. As far as injuries and omission and outs go, it's Rufer only for the 1 game, I believe it is.
One game, yep.
And
Well, and Zawada for the season.
is he up for the season, or is he just balked for a week every week?
The chief, he said he's planning on not having him back this season, but there may be a chance, but he's not counting
Yeah,
on it.
I think at this stage, he'd probably need a preseason just to get started again. But aside from that, I think everyone's available. Let's hope the Mariners.
Payne Hughes is still apparently injured.
You don't rush a hamstring back, especially not on a fullback. It does as much work as Tim Payne, I reckon.
Yeah, it's probably true.
So let's wrap it up there, gents. Thank you for your time. Thank you for rushing back from Australia, Dale.
Thank you. The international podcast window is closed, and I came rushing
Yep.
back to do my domestic duties.
Well, I think you've got more domestic duties than that. Hopefully, the kids stay asleep, mate. Good chat as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hopefully, we're back next week with 3 points in the bag and a nice 6-point lead over the Mariners. So we can crack on and get that plate, bring that back to Wellington for the first time. Thanks all. Bye.
That's it.